Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics with business and industry leaders to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series podcast. I'm James Lee. You know, Thumper's mom in the Disney movie Bambi always said, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. My grandmother, on the other hand, always said, if you don't have anything nice to say about someone, come sit next to me. No matter your approach to giving praise or constructive criticism, we are living in the golden age of sharing. We share what we eat, where we go, what we wear, where we shop, the things we buy, the things we'd like to buy, all on a regular basis, usually on our own social media accounts, those of a merchant or a restaurant or on a review website. A thumbs up or thumbs down and a star rating is ubiquitous as air. Most businesses take the good and the bad reviews in stride just as they do the customers and the circumstances that generate the critiques. But sometimes, some businesses go to great lengths to protect their reputations at the expense of customers' opinions, and that's the topic of our discussion today. Carl Settlemyer is with the Federal Trade Commission in the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and he's the person responsible for ensuring businesses play by the rules under the Consumer Review Fairness Act. So, Carl, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So I have a question, but I know you have a disclaimer.
So yes, so my views are my own, not necessarily those of the commission or any commissioner. That's my disclaimer.
All right. So with that in mind, I dare say most businesses probably are not aware that the Consumer Review Fairness Act even exists. So what does it do?
Well, the Consumer Review Fairness Act essentially bars businesses from using gag clauses in their consumer form contracts. And essentially, if you've got a contract with standardized terms that are not subject to meaningful opportunity for customers to negotiate with you, that will be a form contract, and you cannot insert a provision that prohibits or restricts customers from posting reviews, that penalizes them financially for posting reviews, and that might, say, transfer intellectual property, copyright, in a review to you so that you can suppress it. I mean, basically, Congress tried to sort of knock out this burgeoning technique for trying to control a business's reputation.
So just for clear for everybody who's listening, then when we see those little check boxes that say I read everything in this this form, that's might have been buried in there at one time when you and you check that box, you've agreed to it.
That's correct. So going back a few years, we at the FTC brought a lawsuit against a company, weight loss product company called Roca Labs, that had that very, you know, that exact type of technique. They had very severe non-disparagement provisions buried in an online terms and conditions. You would click a checkbox saying that you read the terms, but this is an extremely unusual provision even at the time. And the company was coming along, and when people left bad reviews about the product, because lo and behold, it didn't work, they were getting sending out nasty grams to their customers saying, you know, you've got to take down your review. This contract provision says we can sue you for however much money it was. And, you know, that got on our radar, and we actually challenged that even before the Consumer Review Fairness Act as being an unfair business practice. But now the Consumer Review Fairness Act basically takes those checkbox, you know, online agreements, at any sort of pre-printed form agreement, or even, you know, something you print off as a business owner off of your computer that your standardized terms and conditions, that's something that would be covered by the Consumer Review Fairness Act in your agreements with customers. It doesn't really affect, say, if you've got a non-disparagement provision between yourself and a business partner or the like. But for anybody who is, you know, your customer, individual customers, that is a covered contract.
So Congress passed this act unanimously, which those of us in yes. Washington know never happens.
That's right.
So, and we tend to legislate by anecdote.
Yes.
So the story you just told about the weight loss, is that the sort of thing that was going on that made Congress say this is a priority and we have to act?
That's exactly right, yes. So between, you know, things like the Roca Lab situation, there was a company, I think, called Clear Gear that also was suing people for leaving bad reviews. And there were, I think going back a few years, there was an outfit called Medical Justice that would have form contracts that they provided to medical practitioners to try to get copyright in a review from the customer, from the patient, and would, you know, threaten people that, I mean, it's remarkable that
that's a novel
people do
approach.
This. Yeah. and basically try to suppress reviews that way. And basically Congress saw this happening, you know, and it was, you know, an alarming trend, and they stepped in, and, you know, much to their credit, you know, came up with this solution that basically, you know, put that on ice in very clear terms.
So that was 2016. So this year, the FTC issued its first enforcement actions under that.
Well, yes. So this year, the FTC issued five consent agreements that alleged violations of the Consumer Review Fairness Act by several.
And these people agreed?
They agreed, yeah. So basically, they, you know, nobody admitted liability. It was basically, you know, your sort of standard FTC consent agreement. But the upshot is that the commission alleged that an HVAC company, a property rental management company, a vacation home rental company, a horseback trail riding company, and a flooring company, all of them had provisions in their contracts that essentially restricted reviews or penalized the reviews, and they agreed under the consent agreements to not enforce those, not use those provisions in the future, and to notify customers that those provisions are void.
So I'm sure there's a business owner listening right now who's saying, well, that doesn't sound so bad to me. What should a business do to protect their reputation without running afoul of this law?
Sure. So a couple of things. First of all, if a business owner is listening now, you need to understand that the Consumer Review Fairness Act does prohibit these type of provisions. And if you violate the law knowingly, you can be subject to civil penalties. And those can be thousands of dollars per violation. So that's something we haven't had occasion to bring a case about yet. But that is definitely something that you need to be concerned about if you have one of these provisions in these in your contracts or you're thinking about it. So
what is it that they need to be doing now? Do they need to go look at their contracts?
Oh, absolutely.
Do they need to, yeah.
Yes. So essentially you want to, if you've got a lawyer or if you don't have a lawyer, look at the contracts. If you've got something in there that's a non-disparagement provision, a confidentiality provision that you're trying to bind your customer to not say something bad about you, you need to, you know, assess whether or not that complies with the law. And the, you know, the bottom line is, in many instances, it will not comply with the Consumer Review Fairness Act. And even if it technically does, you need to think about whether or not it could be an unfair business practice because it's suppressing negative information from getting out to the marketplace in a way that might be detrimental to your customers. We view the Consumer Review Fairness Act and some of the other actions we brought as not just a way to allow you as a customer to express your opinion. It's also a way for other customers to learn from you. And that's really the core of what we're trying to do. It's your right to learn from other customers' experience.
Well, that's really how today, that's how consumers operate, right? The first thing you do is you go look for a review. You know, I want this product. I found a place that sells it. Is the product any good? Is the company any good? So this is an effort to protect that kind of consumer practice.
That's right. And essentially, you know, we don't want, and Congress didn't want in passing this act, businesses to be able to sanitize their reputations by, you know, not just curating the reviews on their own websites, which businesses are still free to, you know, put their own, you know, customer truthful customer endorsements on their websites, and, you know, to not necessarily host anything that somebody writes bad about them on their own website. But when it comes to these third-party review platforms, the TripAdvisors, the Yelps, and so forth, you know, you don't have a right to use a contract provision to pull that down. And the reason is because if every business were doing that, that online ecosystem of reviews and word of mouth would just deteriorate because you would be only allowing the positive stuff out there and not really getting the candid negative information out there that allows businesses to compete with each other and allows consumers to make well-informed choices.
Well, this really is the modern-day version of word of mouth marketing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So that being the case, then you as a consumer, though, you also have an obligation. You have to be truthful and honest in what you say, don't you?
That's right. And consumers need to be, you know, in their dealings with the business, they need to be honest in their reviews. You can't libel or slander or defame a business and say false things about it. Certainly, you can't do that to try to extract some advantage from the business. Otherwise, a business could sue for libel or defamation, just as it always has. But what is really taken off the table is this upfront, preemptive, don't say anything bad about me or I'm going to sue you that was starting to creep into contracts starting several years ago.
Yeah, I was particularly fascinated by the trail riding company who said you cannot contact the local government
the
agency,
animal,
the animal
cruelty.
Control.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, if you, you know, short answer, legal advice off the back of a napkin is if you have a contract provision that says you can't contact law enforcement or some, you know, entity that is trying to, you know, that needs to regulate what you're doing, that's probably not going to be valid, Consumer Review Fairness Act or not.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a no.
Yes.
That's a hard
no. That's correct.
Realizing this is still very early days of the FTC, you know, focusing on this, but what have you learned anything in this process in this time between the act and the enforcement actions? Have you learned anything even since these actions have been announced that can help other businesses avoid problems?
Well, I think that there's a couple of different things. I mean, one is so even before we brought these consent agreement cases this year, the FTC did sue some other kind of scammy business, work at home scam type of businesses, and I think maybe another one that had underlying conduct that was deceptive, unfair, you know, the usual type of thing the FTC has traditionally gone after. But the businesses added in non-disparagement provisions in order to really sanitize their reputation and clamp down on any kind of criticism and to go without detection for as long as they could. That's one type of business that has used these type of provisions. I think in other cases, we believe that, you know, the businesses might have been burned by bad reviews or misled by thinking, oh, I've got this type of provision in some other contract, I can put it into this one, and just not really, you know, necessarily, you know, understanding that that was against the law, understanding how that's going to harm consumer information. And the tendency has been for businesses, particularly when they didn't quite realize that this was wrong, to, you know, they recognize that they've transgressed. And in, you know, in these cases, they understand they can't do these type of contracts anymore. So it really does pay to have a, you know, good lawyer take a look at your contract, take a look at the law and make sure that, you know, you've got that buttoned down and don't just sort of, you know, pick and choose from, you know, your favorite greatest hits of contract provisions and think you can just put that in any customer contract.
Yeah. Lifted out of the Rocket Lawyer website or whatever to pull that provision. Now, a lot of consumer protection laws can also be enforced by states. Is this one of those?
That is one, yes. Yeah. So the CRFA really has three main enforcement vehicles. One is the Federal Trade Commission can bring cases. The other, state attorney generals can bring enforcement actions. And, you know, any of the consumer complaints we get that relate to the CRFA, they go into our Consumer Sentinel database and they're available for the other agencies to look at as well. The third thing is that customers can, while they can't bring an action, they can use the CRFA as a defense, because the Consumer Review Fairness Act, just to be clear, doesn't just keep businesses from, as of, you know, March 2017, offering these provisions. It basically makes them void even if they occurred before that. So consumers can, if you try to sue them for something that was a violation of a contract from a few years ago, they can assert that this is a void provision. And in fact, I think there was a case in the district court, federal district court in D.C., where a customer successfully asserted that recently. So that's an important tool for any consumer to know as well.
Not the last question, but next to last.
Sure.
So, you know, in any regulated environment, there is always a group of folks who take the approach of, yeah, it's cheaper to pay the fine. Rather than to comply because it's inconvenient, they think it's expensive, they just don't like the rule and says, you know, catch me. Do you see that happening here at some point, or do you think this is a clear-cut enough kind of regulation that people kind of go, yeah, that's common sense, I really shouldn't be doing that?
Well, I think that probably a couple of things. One is that we found that, you know, even though when these provisions have been in contracts, and especially when the companies have been trying to enforce them, that, you know, they're kind of outliers. It's not like everybody was deciding, oh, I need to do this, right? So it was sort of a burgeoning thing that got nipped, hopefully, mostly in the bud. But they're still out there, and they probably will be out there, and everybody's going to, you know, decide, you know, 5 years from now, they've come up with a great new idea, right? But it'll still be illegal, right?
Yeah.
So you have, you know, that dynamic going on where this was not a super prevalent thing, but a troubling thing to begin with. And then you combine that with the fact that we've had, you know, actions that have been announced. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether we get more complaints because people now know about the act and consumers know that they can, you know, report them to the FTC, or whether businesses, you know, are going to be finally, you know, getting the message and deciding they're not going to use them at all. They're going to take them out and the complaints will go away. So we've are hopeful that that will, you know, common sense will prevail. People will understand what the law requires and understand it's common sense. But if they don't, there are civil penalties for people who knowingly violate the law. So you can not only be subject to a lawsuit that will prevent you from using these type of provisions in the future, notifying all your customers, all of that would be burdensome. But yes, civil penalties, the law provides for, I think, up to like $40,000 and change per violation, which could be—
That's a serious penalty.
A pretty serious penalty. So again, we hope not to have to go down that road, but it's certainly a tool available to us. And also, if you have been using these provisions because your underlying business model isn't especially honest or reputable, you could get on our radar, you know, sort of in a double way and get under the microscope for actually, you know, your underlying business operations if you're running anything that's sort of, you know, sketchy.
Okay, this is the actual last question. So someone listening, they want to know more. Maybe their attorney isn't as schooled in this area of law. Can they come to the FTC for information? Where do they go?
Well, the FTC.gov website does have a link for businesses. There's a business education page for the Consumer Review Fairness Act. There are links to the cases that we've brought where you can see the type of provisions that were in place. And really, you know, it's a fairly, you know, straightforward, you know, act in terms of what it prohibits. But if you do have questions, it is good to, you know, to talk to a lawyer to see if you've got any exposure. And just like with anything else with your business, if you're doing that homework and you're taking it seriously, you're going to be better off in the long run.
Carl Settlemyer of the FTC Consumer Protection Bureau, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Program's Better Series podcast. Never miss an episode by subscribing at bbbprograms.org, then click on the podcast tab. And as always, you can listen to the Better Series episodes on your Apple Podcast app or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL Programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guest, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.